Good evening. This is Russ Werner, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and tonight's host of Sports Today, the one-hour-long show that airs every Tuesday and Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This edition is for Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. We are going to start off tonight with the NBA playoffs, Game 5 of the NBA championship. Still booming. NBA Finals, Thunder 120, Pacers 109. Thunder hold off the Pacers to take a 3-2 series lead. Jalen Williams scored 40 and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander added 31 to lead the Oklahoma City Thunder to a 120-109 win over the Indiana Pacers in Game 5 of the NBA Finals on Monday. The Thunder lead the series 3-2, moving themselves within a game of the franchise's first NBA title since the team moved to Oklahoma City. The series resumes Thursday in Indianapolis. Even without much offensive production from Tyrese Haliburton, the Pacers cut what was an 18-point first-half deficit to 2 on Pascal Siakam's 3-pointer from the wing with 8:30 remaining. The Thunder immediately responded, though, with Cason Wallace grabbing the rebound on Williams' missed layup and flipping it to Lou Dort, who found Williams for a 3-pointer. After making just 3 3-pointers in Game 4, the fewest in an NBA Finals win since 2010, Oklahoma City made 14 in Game 5. On the next possession, Wallace stepped in front of Andrew Nembhard, passed near half court, and raced for a fast break dunk. The plays ignited an 18-4 run that helped the Thunder put the game away. Williams continued his hot stretch in the finals, going 14 of 25 from the field and 3 of 5 from beyond the arc. He also added 6 rebounds and 4 assists. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was 9 for 21 from the field, 13 of 14 at the free throw line. After being held without an assist in Game 4, the NBA's most valuable player added 10 assists and 4 blocks. 4 of Gilgeous-Alexander's assists and 2 steals came in the fourth quarter. Williams scored 11 of his points in the fourth, but it was the Thunder's defense that led the way Monday. Oklahoma City scored 13 of his 33 fourth-quarter points off 8 Indiana turnovers. The Thunder finished with 32 points off 23 Pacers turnovers. And in some WNBA action from the WNBA roundup from Monday, Reese's triple-double carries Sky past Sun. Angel Reese delivered her first WNBA triple-double with 11 points, 13 rebounds, and 11 assists to lead the Chicago Sky to a 78-66 win over the Connecticut Sun in a Commissioner's Cup game. Reese's triple-double was the second in the WNBA this season, along with the Indiana Fever's Caitlin Clark. It was the first triple-double from a Sky player since Courtney Williams in 2023. Reese and rookie guard Haley Van Lith handled ball distribution in the absence of injured veteran point guard Courtney Vandersloot. The win for Chicago was the team's first since Vandersloot's season-ending knee injury on June 7th against Indiana. Van Lith dropped 16 points off the bench for Chicago, who's 3-7, marking a new season best on 6-for-8 shooting, with 11 of her points coming after halftime. Sky guard Kia Nurse added 11 points, including 3-for-3 shooting from three-point range. Camilla Cardoso and Ariel Atkins each tallied 10 points. Chicago is now 1-3 in Commissioner's Cup play. Connecticut at 2-8 got an impressive performance from guard Marina Mabry, who was traded from the Sky in 2024. Mabry drained a season-best 5 three-pointers on 12 attempts en route to 22 points, but also had 6 turnovers. Then we have the Dream 89, Mystics 56. Alicia Gray's career-high 32 points and 6 of 9 shooting from 3-point range powered a flurry of long-range offense as the Atlanta Dream cruised past the host Washington Mystics in the Commissioner's Cup action. Sonia Kreitren was Washington's only double-figure point scorer with 10 points. Shakira Austin added 9 off the bench, while Brittany Sykes, who came in averaging more than 20 points per game, was held to just 9 on 2 of 10 shooting. Then we have the Phoenix Mercury, 76, Aces, 70. Satou Sabally poured in 22 points and pulled down 9 rebounds as the visiting Phoenix Mercury defeated Las Vegas Aces. Alyssa Thomas chipped in 14 points and 13 assists for a double-double, while Sammy Whitcomb made 3 of 4 three-pointers on her way to scoring 18 for Phoenix, who was 8-4, which opened a 4-game road swing on a high note. Whitcomb helped ice the game with a tray from up top with 1:24 left, pushing the Phoenix lead to 76-70. Kalia Copper also played a key role in the win. The team's leading scorer last year, Copper returned to the lineup from a knee injury and finished with 11 points in her regular season debut. The Aces, at 5-5, had 3 in double figures, including Chelsea Gray, who finished with 20 points, while Jewel Lloyd and Jackie Young chipped in 17 and 15 points, respectively. Las Vegas was once again without reigning MVP Asia Wilson, who has been in concussion protocol since leaving Thursday's game against LA with a head injury. Phoenix led the entire second quarter and was up 43-39 at halftime in this Commissioner's Cup matchup. And back to some NBA news in trade action. Grizzlies trade Bane to Magic in blockbuster deal. This from USA Today. The Memphis Grizzlies have agreed to trade guard Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic in exchange for guards Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Cole Anthony, as well as 4 unprotected first-round picks and 1 first-round pick swap, the teams announced Sunday. Memphis will also receive Orlando's first-round pick in the 2025 NBA Draft, number 16 overall, plus the Phoenix Suns' first-round pick in 2026, and the 2028 and 2030 unprotected first-round selections. "We are very thrilled to welcome Desmond to the Orlando Magic family," Magic President of Basketball Operations Jeff Weltman said in a statement. "Over his 5 years in the NBA, Desmond has distinguished himself as one of the elite guards in our league, and we look forward to his shooting, IQ, and wide-ranging skill set in helping our team take a step forward. Desmond's character is held in high regard across the league, and we believe he will fit seamlessly with our existing players both on and off the court." The 26-year-old Bane just completed his 5th NBA season, where he averaged 19.2 points, 6.1 rebounds, and 5.3 assists for a Memphis team that finished 48-34 and was swept by Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round of the playoffs. Orlando is an up-and-coming team in the Eastern Conference, led by All-Star forward Paolo Banchero and forward Franz Wagner, but the Magic have been eliminated in the postseason's first round in each of the past 2 years. The Magic desperately needed outside shooting, and they get to that in Bane, who shot 39.2% from beyond the arc. Orlando was the NBA's worst three-point team, hitting only 31.8% from downtown, and ranked 27th in overall field goal percentage. Bane also made 51% of his open catch-and-shoot jumpers this season, while the Magic finished last in that category, making 35%. Pope is a 2-time NBA champion with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Denver Nuggets. He averaged 8.7 points, 2.2 rebounds, and 1.8 assists for Orlando last season. Anthony, who's 25, was a first-round pick by the Magic in 2020, and he averaged a career-low 9.4 points in 67 games during the 24-25 season. And now over to some baseball news, starting with the College World Series. This is from the University of Arizona Baseball. Cats CWS Dreams dashed in Omaha. UA's season ends with an 8-3 loss to Louisville in the CWS elimination round. Arizona baseball lost another game in the 8th inning at the College World Series, while Louisville made sure its comeback bid didn't fall short for a second straight game. The Cardinals rallied for 6 runs in that inning to post an 8-3 win in front of 23,647 at Schwab Field. The loss ends the season for the 44-21 Wildcats, the first team eliminated at the CWS. I congratulate Arizona on a great year, Cardinals coach Dan McDonald said. I know it hurts. It's tough on them, but really one bad inning. They deserved to be here. Wildcats coach Chip Hale said it was a difficult way to finish the season. On Friday, Arizona lost its CWS opener to Coastal Carolina, which scored 3 runs in the 8th inning for a 7-4 win. Obviously, it's not the way you want it to end, he said. We played as hard as we could. We just didn't play fundamentally sound baseball today. In Friday night's opening round, the Cardinals scored twice in the top of the 9th inning to tie Oregon State. The Beavers scored a run in the bottom of the 9th to win 4-3, dropping Louisville to the loser's bracket. The Cardinals, at 41-23, had closed to 3-2 on Sunday with a run in the 7th, and then went ahead the next inning, which started with an infield error. Eddie King followed with a single, which chased reliever Garrett Hicks and brought in closer Tony Pluta. Tague Davis singled off Pluta, who was named the Stopper of the Year last week as the nation's top relief pitcher. That loaded the bases for Zion Rose, who delivered a 2-run single to put Louisville on top. After a fielder's choice, number 9 batter Camus Neighbors belted an RBI single to right. It was his 4th hit of the game. A second error in the inning and a squeeze bunt by Alex Alicia extended the Cardinals' lead. A bad hop single, a stolen base, and an RBI single by Matt Klein, the 9th batter in the inning, made the score 8-3. He definitely was not as sharp as he's been, Hale said of Pluta. I know those are some bloop hits and all that, but he gets a lot more swing and misses than that. The Wildcats had gone to work immediately against freshman starter Ethan Eberle, scoring twice in the 1st inning. Adonis Guzman and Garen Caulfield had RBI singles, as Arizona had 3 hits and took advantage of 2 hits batsmen. Louisville got 1 run back in the 2nd on a run-scoring grounder by Rose. The Wildcats extended their lead to 3-1 in the 3rd, when Guzman lined his 9th home run into the left field stands. Louisville threatened in the bottom of the inning, but left fielder Easton Breifogle made a diving catch in the alley with 2 runners on base for the 3rd out. The Cardinals had 2 on in the 5th, but Arizona freshman Smith Bailey, making his 9th start of the season, got a strikeout and 2 flyouts to retire the side. Louisville closed within a run in the 7th when Garrett Pike led off with a double and scored on a sacrifice fly by Lucas Moore. Hicks got out of the inning by inducing Matt Klein to ground out with the tying runner on 2nd. The 8th inning then decided the game and sent Arizona home as the Wildcats fell short of a 5th championship in their 19th CWS trip. It was a great group that really fought, Hale said. We've said it many times that we felt this team could be in Omaha, so I'm not surprised we got here. The coach had one final statement at his post-game press conference. It's so hard to get here, he said. There's 7 teams left now, and I wish them all luck. And in the other game from Sunday, in the Men's College World Series, Coastal Carolina upsets sloppy Oregon State. Coastal Carolina took advantage of a sloppy performance by Oregon State in coasting to a 6-2 win in Game 6 of the Men's College World Series at Charles Schwab Stadium on Sunday night. With their 25th consecutive victory, the 13th-ranked Tensileers at 55-11 are 2-0 in Omaha and in the driver's seat of Bracket 1. Number 8 Oregon State, who is at 48-15-1, will play an elimination game against Louisville at 2 p.m. on Tuesday. The winner of that game will advance to face Coastal Carolina on Wednesday and would need to beat the Tensileers again on Thursday in order to advance to the MCWS Final Series. It was mistake-filled from the outset for the Beavers. After shortstop Ava Arquette pulled first baseman Jacob Craig off the bag with a high throw on the first batter of the game, starting pitcher Ethan Kleinschmidt struck out Sebastian Alexander before loading the bases with a walk and a hit batter while also mixing in a balk. It appeared Kleinschmidt had forced in the first run of the game by hitting Blagan Pato with a pitch. But after a video review, Pato was deemed to have intentionally been hit by the full count pitch and was called for an automatic strike. However, he was quickly picked up by teammate Colby Thorndike, who lined a bases-clearing two-out double just out of the reach of diving Easton Tault in right center field. It was Thorndike's 17th double of the season and staked Coastal Carolina to a 3-0 lead after a 17-minute top of the first inning. Tault got the Beavers on the board with a drive to right to open the bottom of the third, hitting his 8th home run of the season on a 2-1 pitch off Chanteliers starter Jacob Morrison. But Oregon State's poor defense struck again shortly thereafter. And in Monday's CWS action, Wood throws 19-strikeout no-hitter, Arkansas 3, Murray State 0. Everyone in the Arkansas dugout knew to give the silent treatment, except the bat boy. Gage Wood was in the midst of arguably the best pitched game in College World Series history, a 19-strikeout no-hitter where the lone batter who reached the base was hit by a pitch. It was the first no-hitter in Omaha since 1960, and only the third ever as Arkansas won 3-0 against Murray State. No one talked about it in the dugout except for G-Baby, our bat boy, outfielder Charles Davalin said. He came back after the eighth and we went 1-2-3, G-Baby said. Is Gage going out for the no-no? Wood knew that he had a no-hitter going. He had a perfect game that ended with the eighth inning hit batter, a moment about which he said, I screwed it over. But coming off the mound, he had only one thought. We're not going home, Wood said. Wood's gem came in an elimination game after the Razorbacks lost their CWS opener to LSU. With the win, Arkansas will face LSU or UCLA on June 17th for a spot in the semifinals. Catcher Ryder Helfrich called his own game, something that's unusual in college. In most cases, a coach will call pitches. But Helfrich got to call his own with an assist from what Coach Dave Van Horn called educated suggestions. The primary setup pitch for Wood was his fastball, which touched as high as 98 miles per hour with what Murray State players described as a rising effect. It was really special, I'd say, Helfrich said. I think for him to do that and just be able to catch the last ball, give him a big hug. It was awesome. I think everybody was really fired up for him. The main thing is we're still here and we're still playing. And in the other game from Monday, number 6 LSU held a 5-3 lead over number 15 UCLA Monday night when the Men's College World Series game was suspended following a lengthy rain delay. The teams will resume play at the start of the fourth inning on Tuesday. And now over to Major League Baseball action. We'll start with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Padres 8, Diamondbacks 2. This is from Sunday's game. Diamondbacks can't complete series sweep of the Padres. By Nick Piacoro and Jose M. Romero of the Arizona Republic. Diamondbacks right-hander Merrill Kelly jumped ahead of the San Diego Padres' Jake Cronenworth with two quick strikes in the fourth inning on Sunday, but could not put him away. He tried his fastball and changeup, his cutter and curveball, but Cronenworth kept spoiling strikes and laying off balls. On the 10th pitch of the at-bat, Kelly went back to his changeup, one that dipped below the strike zone. Cronenworth was all over it, launching it out to right field. The sequence seemed to encapsulate the day for both Kelly and the Diamondbacks. They did not play poorly in their 8-2 loss to the Padres. They just got beaten. These things happen. Certainly, it's easier to reach those sorts of conclusions when the loss snaps a 5-game winning streak, as this one did. The Diamondbacks had to settle for a series victory rather than a sweep against one of their division rivals and for a 5-1 homestand rather than a 6-0 run. Kelly gave up 4 runs in 5 innings, a start that goes down as a subpar one for the Diamondbacks' most consistent starter this season. The offense was quiet, held to just 3 hits, tying a season worst. The Diamondbacks struck out 14 times, the second most in a game this year. But as they leave town Sunday evening, bound for Toronto, the first stop on a three-city trip that starts Tuesday. It was hard not to recognize how drastically different the feel around the club was compared to when the homestand began. A week ago, the Diamondbacks were reeling. They had just been swept by the Cincinnati Reds. Steps forward were followed by steps back. Their general manager even acknowledged fielding phone calls from rival teams, wondering if the Diamondbacks might sell at the trade deadline. The question was fair then, and it might be fair now, but the week has made it easier to see light at the end of the tunnel. The upcoming schedule does too. The Blue Jays series figures to be a good test. Entering Sunday, no team in baseball had a better record than Toronto since May 28th, but after that, three of the following four series will come against bottom-feeding teams in the Colorado Rockies, Chicago White Sox, and Miami Marlins. Of course, the last time the Diamondbacks faced teams that seemingly should have handled, they dropped series to the Washington Nationals and Pittsburgh Pirates. One possible concern popped up in the seventh inning of the Padres' loss when Diamondbacks shortstop Gerardo Perdomo dived for a Gavin Sheets ground ball and rolled over an awkwardly bent left wrist. He was examined by a trainer and remained in the game, but took a tentative swing in his next turn to the plate. And in a couple of side notes, father-son managing duo shares Father's Day moment. On Father's Day, Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovullo was asked what it's like to watch his oldest son, Nick, grow and develop in his profession as a minor league baseball manager. Nick Lovullo, who's 31, is the manager of the Cubs' Class A affiliate in South Bend, Indiana. He is a true chip off the old block, probably, the elder Lovullo said. The two talk often, both being colleagues besides father and son. Torey Lovullo said he received a text message from his son Sunday morning, wishing him well on Father's Day and for a Diamondbacks series sweep of the Padres. Nick Lovullo also informed his dad that he was ejected from the Cubs' game at Fort Wayne on June 15th. It happened in the second inning, and Nick Lovullo honored his dad by pointing at the umpires and ejecting them, as Torey did on May 14th when he was ejected in San Francisco. "Just want to say happy Father's Day. Did this one for you," Torey Lovullo said, sharing what his son told him on the phone. Torey said conversations with his son start with checking on how their families are doing, then eventually migrate to baseball talk. "He helps me too. We help each other," Torey Lovullo said. "Typical baseball conversations that you and I would have. It's in that space. But I'm always dad first for him. All my kids know that, and I'm very proud to be their father." And finally, Diamondbacks add veteran Dave Slafani, Jarvis back to Reno. The Diamondbacks made a move to shore up their organizational pitching depth, signing right-hander Anthony Dale Slafani to a major league contract and fitting him on the roster by optioning right-hander Bryce Jarvis to AAA Reno. Right-hander Justin Martinez was transferred to the 60-day injured list to open up a 40-man spot. Dave Slafani will work in long relief for the Diamondbacks. He last pitched in the majors in 2023. He missed all of 2024 following surgery to repair a torn flexor tendon in his right arm. And then now in the rest of Major League Baseball from Sunday's roundup, Red Sox win, send Devers to Giants. Rafael Devers homered and Brian Bello tossed seven shutout innings as the Boston Red Sox completed a three-game sweep of the visiting New York Yankees with a 2-0 victory Sunday. The Red Sox then traded the All-Star slugger to the San Francisco Giants in a blockbuster deal that included right-hander Jordan Hicks going to Boston. The Red Sox also acquired left-hander Kyle Harrison, outfield prospect James Tibbs III, and right-handed pitching prospect Jose Bello. A three-time All-Star with Boston, the 28-year-old Devers was hitting .272 with 15 home runs and 58 RBIs in 73 games this season. However, he has been at odds with the Red Sox front office after first declining to move to designated hitter after the Red Sox signed Gold Glove third baseman Alex Bregman in the offseason, then declining to play first base following the season-ending injury to Tristan Hill Casas on May 2nd. Devers, who has been a mainstay in the Red Sox lineup since he debuted at age 20 in 2017, signed an 11-year, $331 million extension in January 2023. Per reports, the Giants will pay the rest of the contract that includes eight more seasons following the 2025 campaign. As for the return the Red Sox received, Hicks can start or relieve, but has struggled this season, posting a 1-5 record with a 6.47 ERA, over 482 and Hicks can start or relieve, but has struggled this season, posting a 1-5 record with a 6.47 ERA over 48 2/3 innings. He does possess a 97.3 mile per hour fastball, but has had trouble harnessing his command. The 28-year-old is in the second year of a 4-year, $44 million deal. Harrison, at 23, is a former prospect who was ranked number 11 in 2023 on MLB Pipeline's Top 100 Prospects list. In 2025, he is 1-1 with a 4.56 ERA in 8 appearances, 4 of those being starts, spanning 23 2/3 innings, and has the potential to eventually anchor a rotation. In 3 seasons since the Giants drafted him in the 3rd round in 2020, Harrison is 9-9 with a 4.48 ERA in 182 2/3 innings over 39 games, 35 of those being starts. And New York's first two hitters in the 8th inning of the game reached base against reliever Brennan Bernardino, but the Yankees failed to score when Garrett Whitlock got Aaron Judge to ground into an inning-ending double play. Judge struck out each of his 3 at-bats against Bello. Next, we have Dodgers 5, Giants 4. Andy Pages hit a 3-run home run to lift the host Los Angeles Dodgers to a win over the San Francisco Giants. Dustin May, at 4-4 with a 4.46 ERA, pitched 6 innings for the win. The right-hander gave up 6 hits, 3 earned runs, walked 4, and struck out 3 on 94 pitches. Tanner Scott struck out the side in a 1-2-3 ninth inning for his 13th save. Sean Gill was the last-minute starter for the Giants. Harrison was warming up in the bullpen less than 30 minutes before game time when he was told he was part of the trade with Boston. We already talked about the Padres 8, Diamondbacks 2, so we'll move on to the Mariners 6, Guardians 0. J.P. Crawford hit a grand slam, and Emerson Hancock pitched 7 scoreless innings as the Seattle Mariners completed a 3-game sweep of the visiting Cleveland Guardians. Crawford, celebrating his first Father's Day as a dad after the off-season birth of a daughter, went deep off Luis Ortiz, who is 3-8, in a 5-run second inning. The Guardians lost for the 8th time in their past 10 games. Next, we have Rangers 2, White Sox 1. Ezekiel Duran and Marcus Semien drove in runs to back the pitching of Kumar Rocker and 3 relievers as the Texas Rangers did just enough to beat the reeling Chicago White Sox in the finale of a 3-game series in Arlington, Texas. Rocker, who's 2-4, drew the start for Texas after being activated by the team earlier Sunday to take the roster spot of Tyler Mahle, who went on the injured list retroactive to June 12th with a right shoulder fatigue. Rocker went 5 scoreless innings, allowing 4 hits and a walk and striking out 6, despite battling dehydration in the 5th inning. He posted his first win since April 17th, a stint covering 3 major league starts. Next, we have Cubs 3, Pirates 2 in 10 innings. Ian Happ drove in the game-winning run in the bottom of the 10th inning to give the Chicago Cubs a win and take the series against the visiting Pittsburgh Pirates. Automatic runner Vidal Bruan and Kyle Tucker pulled off a double steal with John Berti at the plate. Automatic runner Vidal Bruan and Kyle Tucker pulled off a double steal with John Berti at the plate, and then Happ knocked a single into right field off reliever David Bednar, who's 1-5, scoring Bruhan. The Pirates have lost consecutive games for the first time since June 1st through 3rd. Now, the Athletics 3, Royals 2. Nick Kurtz's solo home run in the top of the ninth broke a tie and gave the Athletics a win over the host Kansas City Royals. The Athletics, who swept the three-game series, also got a home run from Austin Wins. Kurtz was 2-for-4, and Brent Rooker was 2-for-3. The Royals lost their sixth straight and have only scored 11 runs in those games, despite a players-only closed-door meeting after Saturday's 4-0 loss. Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino were each 2-for-4 with an RBI. Now we have Rays 9, Mets 0. Shane Baz pitched 6 2/3 effective innings, and Jonathan Aranda hit a 2-run double in the fifth inning after scoring the first run in a 3-run second inning as the visiting Tampa Bay Rays continued their surge with a victory over the New York Mets. Baz, who's 6-3, held the Mets to 3 hits during his second longest start of the season, and New York's top 4 hitters of Francisco Lindor, Brandon Nimmo, Juan Soto, and Pete Alonso were a combined 1-of-9 against him. Baz threw a career-high 106 pitches, won his third straight decision, and the Rays won with him on the mound for the fifth straight time. Now we have Astros 2, Twins 1-10 innings. Mauricio Dubon hit a walk-off single to left field with 2 outs in the 10th inning, and the Houston Astros completed a 3-game series sweep of the Minnesota Twins. Dubon drove home Jake Myers with a high-fly ball off Twins reliever Cole Sands, who's 3-3, that left fielder Willie Castro fielded to catch at the wall. Myers opened up the bottom of the 10th, placed at second base, but had not moved up after a ground out and a strikeout. The Astros rallied against Twins closer Johan Duran for a second consecutive game, pulling even in the 9th when Victor Quarantini hit a sacrifice fly to left that scored Jeremy Pena, who walked to lead off the frame. With one out, Pena stole second and advanced to third on a Jose Altuve infield single. Now we have Phillies 11, Blue Jays 4. Nick Castellanos hit a grand slam. Rookie Otto Kemp went 4-for-5 with 3 runs scored and 2 RBIs. And Alec Baum also homered and drove in 3 runs as the Philadelphia Phillies completed a 3-game series sweep of the visiting Toronto Blue Jays. It was the second grand slam of the season for Castellanos and the 9th of his career, tied for 3rd among active players behind Manny Machado with 12, of the San Diego Padres, and Giancarlo Stanton with 11 of the New York Yankees. Castellanos had a chance to hit another grand slam in the 7th, but flew out to the edge of left field warning track, which we are now just past the halfway point in this evening's sports today. Now continuing on, we have Brewers 3, Cardinals 2. Quinn Priester allowed 1 run and 4 hits over 6 innings to help the Milwaukee Brewers capture a win against the visiting St. Louis Cardinals in the finale of their 4-game series. Priester, who's 5-2, struck out 3 and didn't walk a batter en route to his 4th straight win. St. Louis starter Miles Mikolas, who's 4-4, allowed 2 runs and 6 hits over 6 innings, striking out 7 and walking 1. Ivan Herrera had 2 hits, including a solo home run, and Brendan Donovan also had a pair of safeties for St. Louis, which has lost 7-of-8. Now, Rockies 10, Braves 1. Braxton Fulford drove in a career-best 5 runs, and Austin Gomber threw 5 scoreless innings in his season debut to propel the visiting Colorado Rockies to a rare victory over the Atlanta Braves. Gomber, who was activated from the 60-day injured list prior to the series finale, allowed just 2 hits while striking out 4 and walking 1. Jake Bird, who's 2-1, allowed the game-tying run in the 6th inning, but earned the win after the Rockies plated 6 runs in the 7th. Ryan McMahon homered, and Jordan Beck drove in 2 for Colorado, which posted just its 14th win of the season and improved to 7-30 on the road. Now, Marlins 3, Nationals 1. Dane Myers had 3 hits, including a home run. And the visiting Miami Marlins beat the Washington Nationals to complete the 3-game sweep. Nick Fortes added 3 hits for Miami, which completed its first 3-game sweep of the season and won 3 in a row overall for the first time since April 20th through 22nd. Washington went 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position as his offensive struggles continued. The Nationals have lost 8 straight and 11 of 13 and are a season-worst 11 games under 500. Now, Orioles 11, Angels 2. Gary Sanchez belted a 7th-inning grand slam to help the Baltimore Orioles record a victory against the visiting Los Angeles Angels, completing a 3-game sweep. Sanchez homered for the 2nd day in a row after missing time since late April with an injury. Raymond Urias and Jordan Westberg also homered as Baltimore produced its 3rd series sweep in its last 5 series. Nolan Schanell hit a home run and had 2 of the Angels' hits. And finally, we have Reds 8 and Tigers 4. Ely De La Cruz homered for the 4th consecutive game and drove in 3 runs, and the Cincinnati Reds rallied against the host Detroit Tigers. De La Cruz had 3 hits and scored 3 runs, while Gavin Lux drove in the go-ahead run during a 4-run 8th inning. Jamai Jones and Winchell Perez homered for the Tigers. And in some golf news from the PGA, Spahn weathers the storm, this from the U.S. Open. During a less-than-fruitful 2024 season, J.J. Spahn wondered if he should call it a career if he failed to keep his PGA Tour card. He could have called it a weak Sunday when he bogeyed 5 of his first 6 holes at the U.S. Open, dropping behind several more accomplished golfers on the leaderboard before a 96-minute weather delay. In both cases, Spahn rejected the idea of quitting. Then, amid a Pittsburgh summer storm, came the lightning strike. Spahn sank an improbable 64.5-foot birdie putt at the 18th hole to cap his stunning first major victory, emerging from the pack in the wild, waterlogged final round of the U.S. Open on Sunday at Oakmont Country Club. He finished the round birdie-birdie to card a 2-over 72 and finished the week 1-under par 279, 2 shots better than Scotland's Robert McIntyre with a final round of 68. I just felt like you keep putting yourself in these positions, like eventually you're going to tick one off, Spahn said. But all those close calls that I've had on the PGA Tour this year has just been really good experience to just never give up. Spahn, who's 34, had just 1 prior victory on the PGA Tour and had never finished inside the top 20 at a major. His closest brush with glory came when he lost a playoff to Rory McIlroy at the Players' Championship this past March. Spahn shot 66 Thursday to take the early lead, hung around through Friday and Saturday, and then won a war of attrition in horrid weather conditions. At one point down the stretch, 5 players were tied for the lead at 1-over, and that group didn't even include eventual runner-up McIntyre. At the 314-yard par 4 17th hole, Spahn pumped a drive uphill that settled on the well-guarded green. He two-putted for birdie to take the outright lead. Needing par at number 18 to beat McIntyre, Spahn landed his 2nd shot on the far side of the green and got a read from playing partner Victor Hovland of Norway, who putted first. Spahn drained the birdie and let the waterworks flow as the heavens poured on him. We kind of got a good line, a good read on the speed from Hovland, Spahn said. I was more focused on how hard he was hitting it. I kind of knew the line already, but it looked like he gave it a pretty good whack because it started raining there for the last 10-15 minutes. About 8 feet out, I kind of went up to the high side to see if it had a chance of going in, and it was like going right in. I was just in shock and disbelief it went in, and it was over. Hovland, with a 73, placed 3rd at 2-over, Cameron Young with a 70, England's Tyrrell Hatton at 72, and Mexico's Carlos Ortiz at 73 all tied for fourth at 3 over. Sam Burns led Spahn and Australia's Adam Scott by 1 stroke after 54 holes, but Burns and Scott came undone in the rain. Burns shot 40 on the back nine of an 8-over 78 to drop to 4-over, tied with Scotty Scheffler's 70 and Spain's Jon Rahm 67. Scott at 79 posted 6-over. Even before the adverse conditions set in Sunday afternoon, there was carnage throughout the final few pairings. The worst seemed to be reserved for Spahn, who bogeyed 5 of his first 6 holes and got an especially bad break at number 2. Spahn's wedge shot into the green took one hop and bounced off the flagstick. The backspin kicked in, and the ball rolled 40 yards down the front of the green as Spahn stared bewildered. The rain gear had come out well before play was postponed at 4:01 p.m., and while Oakmont was devilishly difficult throughout the week, heavy rain made the back nine borderline unfair. The sloped fairway at number 11 repelled most drives, and the rough, already 5 inches long, was even harder to escape. Those elements combined to stymie Burns and Scott when they arrived at the 11th in first and second place, respectively. Scott needed 2 hacks to get out of the greenside rough, while it took 4 strokes for Burns to get his ball to stay on the green. Scott chased a long bogey putt with a triumphant fist pump before Burns tapped in for a double. Then Burns' par putt at number 12 lipped out, creating a 5-way tie at 1 over, Burns, Scott, Spahn, Ortiz, and Hatton. One by one, their names dropped down the board. Scott went bogey, bogey, double at numbers 14 through 16. Ortiz doubled number 15, and Burns had another implosion at the same hole. Burns argued unsuccessfully for a free drop out of a water-filled divot in the fairway, hit a poor second shot from there into the rough, and wound up making double bogey. McIntyre, meanwhile, got an 8-foot putt to fall at number 14 to creep up to 2 over, and then chipped his second shot at number 17 to 4 feet for his final birdie. He 2-putted for par at the last to get in the clubhouse at 1 over 281. My previous rain delay comebacks haven't been very strong. Today was a day that I said to myself, why not? Why not it be me today? McIntyre said before heading off to watch the conclusion of the round. NBC's cameras caught McIntyre in the clubhouse watching Spahn's final putt on TV and applauding his competitor. Hovland, the 2023 FedEx Cup champion, fell off the pace with 4 front-nine bogeys, but managed to play the back nine even par. He finished top 5 at a major for the 4th year in a row, but he still seeks his first victory. After Spahn's start, it just looked like he was out of it immediately, Hovland said. Everyone came back to the pack. I wasn't expecting that, really. I thought I had to shoot maybe 3 under par today to have a good chance, but obviously the conditions got really, really tough, and this golf course is just a beast. Now over to some motorsports with NASCAR. Van Gisbergen dominates for the win in Mexico City. Shane Van Gisbergen led a race-high and career-best 60 laps and decimated the field in NASCAR's historic road course race Sunday afternoon, winning the Viva Mexico 250 at Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez in Mexico City, Mexico. The Auckland, New Zealand native, who won 3 titles in the Supercar Series, clinched his 2nd NASCAR Cup Series victory by easily distancing his number 88 Trackhouse Racing Chevrolet over Christopher Bell's number 20 Toyota. The first full-year Cup driver won by 16.57 seconds in his 16th start this season and earned a spot in the 10-race postseason despite being 33rd in points entering the race. The season's 2nd of 6 twisting layouts was the first points-paying International Cup event since 1958 when the series competed in Toronto. Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, and Michael McDowell rounded out the top 5 finishers. Subbing for last week's winner Denny Hamlin because of a birth of his child, Ryan Truex was 23rd in his first Cup start since 2014. Hamlin's absence snapped his consecutive start streak at 406 Cup races, dating back to missing at Auto Club Speedway in California in March of 2014. The 20-lap Stage 1 was marred right away as rain began to fall on lap 1. That brought pole sitter Van Gisbergen and almost the entire field to pit road for rain tires, though Chris Buescher and Austin Cindric stayed on slicks to no avail. As cars slipped on the 2.42-mile, 15-turn track, Busch lost control of his number 8 Chevrolet on lap 7 and sparked a wreck in turn 1 that also collected Kyle Larson, Shane Smith, Justin Haley, A.J. Allmendinger, and Chase Briscoe. With the rain ceasing in the segment's second half and Van Gisbergen passing Ty Gibbs for the lead, the number 88 driver built a 5-second lead but pitted with 2 laps remaining to change back to slicks. Ryan Preece claimed Stage 1 and was followed by Ryan Blaney and Ross Chastain. Gibbs's number 54 Toyota led most of Stage 2, but he pitted with 2 laps to go. Van Gisbergen beat Bell and Bowman for the segment win at lap 45. With Van Gisbergen having already pitted, the battle between the 88 and the 54 took a twist when Carson Hocifar brought out a caution in a blind corner on lap 66. That caused Gibbs to finally pit, lose multiple positions, and end his chance of earning his first Cup victory. Their next race will be this coming Sunday, June 22nd, the Great American Getaway 400, presented by VisitPA.com at Pocono Raceway, Long Pond, Pennsylvania, 160 laps, 400 miles. In IndyCar, Kirkwood earns third win of the season. Kyle Kirkwood picked up his second consecutive win and third this IndyCar Series season, holding off Pato O'Ward and Christian Rasmussen in the Bomarito Automotive 500 at Worldwide Technology Raceway in Madison, Illinois. Kirkwood had the best final pit stop in the 260-lap event on the 1.25-mile track, gaining the advantage on O'Ward and Scott Dixon for the final stint. O'Ward finished 0.5 seconds back, and Rasmussen less than 1 second behind. It was Kirkwood's first career oval victory. Series points leader Alex Palou, who has 5 race wins, finished 8th. Rasmussen, who started 25th, and whose car briefly had flames coming from the rear during a pit stop, made an incredible 71 on-track passes. Next was Connor Daly, the 6th-place finisher with 38 on-track passes. Team Penske's drivers all exited early. Pole sitter Will Power finished 27th after a crash. Joseph Newgarden was 25th after going upside down after getting caught by Lewis Foster's spinning car. And Scott McLaughlin was 24th after a tire issue. And their next race will also be this coming Sunday, June 22nd, the XPEL Grand Prix at Road America. At Road America, Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. And in Formula One, Russell wins in Canada after McLaren's collide. George Russell took Mercedes' first win of the Formula One season in Canada on Sunday, while McLaren's Oscar Piastri went 22 points clear in the championship after teammate Lando Norris smashed into him and retired. Red Bull's Max Verstappen, who had hoped to win for a record 4th year in a row at Montreal's Circuit Gaz-Vidère, took second. Russell's 18-year-old Italian rookie teammate Kimi Antonelli finished third for his first F1 podium. Piastri was fourth, with the safety car leading the final lap before peeling off to clear the way for Russell to take the checkered flag. An uneventful afternoon erupted in headline drama when Norris hit the rear of Piastri's car 3 laps from the end, a clash long predicted in the title battle while trying to overtake. The Briton, who ended at a standstill by the side of the track with no front wing and a broken car, was quick to blame himself. "I'm sorry. All my bad. All my fault. Stupid from me," Norris said over the team radio. Piastri pitted as the safety car was deployed and rejoiced with a tire advantage over Antonelli that he could not use as the racing never resumed. Glad I didn't ruin his race. In the end, apologies to the team, Norris told Sky Sports Television. This wasn't even like a that's racing. It was just silly from my part. Ferrari's Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton finished 5th and 6th, with Fernando Alonso 7th for Aston Martin, and Nico Hülkenberg bringing in more solid points for Sauber in 8th place. Their next race will be June 27th through 29th, the Austrian Grand Prix 2025 in Austria. And the NHRA Pro Series drag racing was off this past weekend. Their next race will be coming up this coming weekend, June 20th through 22nd, the American Rebel Light Virginia NHRA Nationals at Virginia Motorsports Park in North Dinwiddle, Virginia. Now I'm going to go back to some basketball news for the Phoenix Suns. NCAA assist champ to work out for the Suns. This is by Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic. Ryan Nemhard has thoroughly enjoyed watching his big brother, Andrew, help the Indiana Pacers reach the NBA Finals. Super proud, Ryan Nemhard said. Things like this don't happen often. Some people may never reach a finals their whole career, so it's special for him to do it in year 3. I've always had belief in him and his ability, to do big things in this league, so I'm super happy for him. Ryan is looking to join Big Bro in the NBA also. Ryan Nemhard has pre-draft workouts scheduled with more than 15 NBA teams, including the Phoenix Suns. Nemhard is scheduled to visit the Suns this week. Just be you, Ryan Nemhard said. People like you because of what you've shown your whole career. It's not going to change all of a sudden now because you're in this situation. Phoenix currently has the 29th overall pick in the first round and the 52nd overall selection in the second round of the June 25th, 26th draft in Brooklyn. Nemhard averaged 11.6 points on 44.6% shooting and led the NCAA in assists at 9.8 a game in his final year at Gonzaga this season. The 6-foot guard improved his 3-point shooting from 33% in his junior year to 40.4% in his senior year. Beyond the numbers, Nemhard's pick-and-roll skills make him a shoot-or-pass threat in college that can translate to the NBA. My feel for the game and my impact go with that. Just being able to impact and have a feel out there, Nemhard said. Make winning plays for a team. The Suns have already had Michigan big Danny Wolf, Alabama forward Grant Nelson, Missouri guard Caleb Grill, and Nevada guard Kobe Sanders visit for pre-draft workouts. Auburn big Johnny Brome said Thursday, June 12, he's scheduled to have a pre-draft workout with the Suns. I think I'll fit well in a lot of organizations, Brome said after a pre-draft workout with the Golden State Warriors. Whoever picks me will get a good player, a dog, somebody who is going to contribute right away. Sanders and Brome both had their pre-draft workouts with the Warriors on the same day. And in the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, Panthers 5, Oilers 2. Panthers move within a win of second straight championship. The last time Brad Marchand achieved this level of success in the Stanley Cup Final, it was just his second season in the NHL and his first time in the postseason. It was 2011, when the then 23-year-old scored 5 goals to help the Boston Bruins win the Stanley Cup. Now a grizzled veteran at 37 and a member of the Florida Panthers, Marchand has done it again, scoring twice in a 5-2 win in Game 5 of the Cup Final Series against the host Edmonton Oilers to put the Panthers a win away from repeating as champions. Marchand has 6 goals in the series, which Florida leads 3-2. Man, that guy's looking good. That'll probably be it, quipped Marchand. When asked what his younger self might say to the current version, it's just how it plays sometimes. Sometimes you get bounces, sometimes you don't. But definitely be grateful to be in this opportunity and have another opportunity to be in the final and be part of a really good team for sure. Eetu Lehtorainen had a goal and an assist, and Sergei Bobrovsky made 19 saves for the Panthers, who can clinch the trophy at home in Sunrise, Florida on Tuesday. I thought Sergei, in the first 10 minutes, got tested hard, Florida coach Paul Maurice said. When you're on the road, if you can keep the building from lighting it up in the first 10 minutes, that's just a big part of the emotions of what goes on. His performance was key. Connor McDavid and Corey Perry scored for the Oilers. Calvin Pickard made 14 saves. I thought we had a really good start, and we didn't capitalize on our early chances and made a couple of mistakes, Edmonton coach Chris Knobloch said. Knowing that we're in a difficult situation, winning our last two games is something we're confident that we can do. We've been through difficult situations before, and it's just another one that we'll overcome. And finally, in some tennis news, Fritz upends Zverev in Germany. Second-seeded Taylor Fritz recorded a 6-3, 7-6 win over home favorite Alexander Zverev in the final of the Boss Open on Sunday at Stuttgart, Germany. Fritz fired 11 aces to defeat the top-seeded German for the fifth straight time and capture his first title of the year and ninth overall. The American did not face a break point and won 88% of his first serve points. He finished it off with a one-sided tiebreaker to win the match in 1 hour 25 minutes. Zverev was competing in his first grass court final since 2017. And that's going to wrap up tonight's edition of Sports Today for Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. I'm Russ Werner, tonight's host of Sports Today and a volunteer leader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Don't forget, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then under Programming Links, left-click on On Demand Podcast. Also, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.